So Atta, maybe we should start with you and how things are going. And
I've been trying to run some tests in a bigger scale with bigger regions, creating bigger regions. So I came across some problems there. So when I tried to figure out what happened, I see that we have some problems in region delete code. So when we're maintaining a list of a free list of R nodes to allocate the R node. When you create the regions, we have to create allocate the R nodes from that list. So what's happening is that the list is not properly maintained. So I was getting an segmentation fault, but the main thing that was happening when I was deleting the regions, the regions are not being added to the free list again.
So there's a linked list management issue there?
Yes.
Wow.
So it's in the, like, we are creating R nodes, let's say 256 R nodes at one time. So if the list is exhausted, we create another one. But what is happening is when I delete the regions, the linked the R nodes are not being added to the list. So there is a lot
of the list of deleted list or
free list. So when I delete an R node, a region, the R node is free to be used again.
Yeah.
So that should be added to the free list. But that is not being, that's not happening. And so,
by the way, did you meet with Russell and walk through the code?
Yeah, we had a walkthrough on the code, just overview of.
Okay. I think you should have one more based on what.
Yeah, because I'm having some troubles in the.
Yeah.
I thought it was due to the memory allocation and because I was having the segmentation fault. So, and another thing is,
so do you think you'll have some additional numbers for me?
I'm not sure because I have to fix this bug. Because when I'm trying to run this, trying to run the test, I have to delete the regions before I create another one. Otherwise, this memory is leaking, and at one point, like after creating 256 regions or so, I crash.
Memory is leaking, so that's a separate problem.
Yes, because the R nodes are free, but they are not added to the linked list.
But the... There's someone on the door. Hello.
Come on. Sorry for being late.
So, but the create benchmark doesn't delete to any deletions, right?
No.
So you must delete because when you hit 256, you have a problem.
Yes. Otherwise, so that's what is happening.
So now, I mean, instead of fixing the create problem, you're fixing the delete problem.
Yes.
Why not fix the create problem?
But the create only uses the R nodes from the R list of free R
nodes. So you're saying we can only create 256?
For now, we can only create 256. So if we can add this freed R nodes to the list, then we can actually create more. But we can, let's say, at one time we create...
But what if I don't delete at all? If I don't delete at all, I cannot go beyond 256, you're saying?
No, that's the problem with the create. So, when we're doing delete...
Forget about delete, right? Yeah. Let's say you don't have any delete in your code, and you only keep creating. Can you go endlessly?
Creating? No, there's also a problem with create. So
there are two separate problems.
Two separate problems. Okay. First one is that we are not creating, we're not being able to create the next available R nodes to the free list. Let's say next 256 R nodes. That's one problem. The second problem.
But all these seem like simple coding errors.
Yeah, but I thought when we did the code, we checked it for like smaller numbers, creating.
All I'm saying is that. These seem relatively easy to fix.
Yes, but I didn't know where the error was. I had to find the errors.
Okay.
So, for the last 2 days, I was debugging where the error was. So,
I see. You're not using KGDB, are you?
I'm using GDB.
You're using GDB.
Yes.
To debug the kernel.
Yes. And another thing, actually, I need to do it later, is to create a separate module for this one. Because it's a lot of time when I change some code and run reboot.
Yes.
So I have to somehow put some portion of the region system into a module.
Yeah. Okay, so you're saying that there won't be any new data for tomorrow's presentation.
So I have to fix this, fix these issues before I...
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so you are debugging, basically. Small debugging. How's it going for you, Leo?
I haven't done anything else about it.
Yeah, because you're busy with the other paper. Okay. And how about you, Daniel?
Well, I started looking into using GDB to debug why some of the tests are going wrong or failing. And also recently I started thinking about looking into another, I guess, part of the CMake suite, which is called C-Dash, and which allows you to do code completion to see if everything is being tested.
Code coverage.
Yes, code coverage. So, I started looking into that.
Yeah, I feel like going too deep into the testing is probably not required. If it's like an easy thing for you to do, then I don't have any problem with it. But if it's a significant learning curve, I feel like your time may not be very well spent in that direction to do more exhaustive testing of the existing code.
Okay.
So, Leo, what are your thoughts here?
I agree. I mean, having something like that would be nice, but it's probably very low in the list of priorities.
So, what in your mind is the higher priority items for Daniel?
Honestly, I'm not sure. Maybe, we already have a build system that works. I guess we want to add in some more tests that you have to start reading the code, understand how things work. So I guess the next natural step would be to start.
It would be good if you can give him some more concrete pointers as to what he could do. Right? In what specific direction he could focus his efforts in.
Well, sure.
If I go through with the code coverage, that's one way of then from there going on to creating more tests if it isn't completely covered already, which would put me in the code.
Yeah, you could go in that direction, and I'm fine with you doing it that way. The only concern I have is that if it's an additional suite that you need to, a tool that you need to learn about, and that might take several days or even weeks, and that's my concern.
Okay.
Right.
Well,
and
I could just try, but if it takes too long, just cap it off.
And also, I don't think that, you know, writing more tests is necessarily the right thing for Daniel to be doing. I mean, I think understanding how existing tests work and how they use the code is probably the more important before you can do anything new, right? So do you have a good sense for how the tests work, what they do, the existing tests? Maybe what you can do for next week is that you can make a list of the tests, right, and create a document or spreadsheet, whatever, and make a list of what they do and what their outcome is. I think if you have a concrete task, then it'll be easier for you because I need to create this spreadsheet with the list of tests, their functions, and observed outcome. And you can add to it by saying it's like under this input the outcome is this, under this input the outcome is this. I think for you to go through a concrete exercise like that, where you have to produce something, will create the right set of triggers to do various things.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. To go further into the code.
Yeah, yeah. And creating the table, use that as a goal. Creating the spreadsheet with a list of tests and what they do, and what is the outcome. I think it would be a good starting point for you. And for you to understand what may be missing in the test.
Okay.
For us to understand what may be missing. Yeah?
Go ahead with that, then.
Okay, excellent.
There's probably one thing that will be very helpful to have. The problem is that the pointer at functions, function that is used to raise the persistent pointers, a function takes as a parameter the address of the pointer that you want to register. Nobody points to but the address of the pointer. So when you declare the function is declared, takes a void aster. It has to be a void because you don't know what type you're passing to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be aster because you're taking the address of the pointer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the compiler complains about types mismatch because what you pass to it is never void aster. It's the address of a pointer to an instruction.
You can always cast it as void aster and pass it along.
Right. So you would either have to cast every time you call a function, which is very annoying, the alternative, which is kind of tricky, there's a flag that you can pass to the compiler saying, don't complain about this specific warning.
No. No, that's dangerous.
No, but the compiler makes a distinction between that one and some others. This
it says specifically void ** casting you a word, you know.
No, not that one. It's pointer types.
Ah, yes, that's
it. So
it's more generic.
I don't know. I don't have a good solution for that. I don't want to enable that, to add that flag there, because...
Yeah, then we'll miss some... If we miss some critical thing and we'll stuck for days because we forgot that we turned on some random flag in.
Right, but at the same time, I have so many of those, then I spend over a day.
I think the right thing then to do is to do the casting. I mean, although the code looks a little ugly, but I think that's the right thing to do, because you know that you're doing an explicit cast.
Yeah,
and you know then that, okay, here's why I'm doing it. I'm doing it exactly here, for this specific reason.
I try to fix it by using macros. So they just have a macro, and the macro internally as the casting, but that didn't work.
That didn't work?
No. So I'm out of ideas. The thing is very annoying. Very, very annoying.
Well, one thing which you could do is take each of those warnings and cast it.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a trouble, but yeah, coding is not always trouble-free, right?
Yeah. I just want to find a better solution.
Anyway. I don't have a better solution, unfortunately. That compiler switch doesn't sound like the right thing to do.
You think?
Yeah. I know for sure. Because we are dealing with pointers all the time in this code. Right? So if something breaks, it is quite likely that we don't see it.
I don't know how other way to define a function so that it doesn't complain. I mean, it has to be a boy aster.
Yeah, I think that much is clear. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if there is an alternate solution to this. Maybe there is someone who has figured it out.
So, yeah, that's...
In C++ you have inheritance, right?
Yeah, you can.
That addresses it to some extent.
Yeah, but you have to declare a specific.
Well, actually,
type.
Abstract types. You have abstract types where the casting is automatic.
Right. I thought that the new standard of C. I think the new standard of C has something like that, but the C99. It has some macros called type of, and you can get a type and things like that. But
yeah, but that doesn't help with this problem.
I thought if I could use a macro and wrap the type of that and have some castings, I don't know. The macro is fairly straightforward. You just pass the parameter with no type, and then before you call the actual pointer, you add the casting always. But that didn't work.
Why do you say it didn't work?
Well, the warning, it's just the same warning, but now say, hey, you have the same warning that's now coming from the expansion of this macro. It's like, seriously? Yeah. I'm also compatible with all those warnings.
Well, I think this is an issue that we could resolve eventually. We It could be just how we define the micro that might be an issue. But if the solution is turning on some compiler switch that ignores these kinds of warnings, I don't think that it would be a good idea for us to do. But going back to question for Daniel, right? I think having him work on the spreadsheet is a good starting point. Because I don't know if you've been able to spend much time understanding this RPM code. When you start creating this table, you will be forced to do that.
Okay.
At least to some extent.
Okay. Are you referring to the old?
No.
The library code.
Okay.
Not the test. Now the test you have to
understand. But he's referring to the new library, not the old one.
What more?
SoftBeam is the old one. The new one, we rename it to
PMLib. Okay, yeah, PMLib. That's the one I'm talking about. Yep. So, Atha, what, besides the troubleshooting with this code, I guess converting it into a module.
Yeah, these are the two main goals now.
Is it possible to convert this some?
Yeah.
It might be that you have to modify kernel so that you can create a module, but then the advantage there is that most of your changes are in the module, and so you don't have to compile the kernel each time. You just compile it once to make the kernel module friendly, and then you just compile it.
I'm trying to find which functions I have to export the functions that I've been using internally from the kernel.
But if you're having a crash problem, then moving into a module is not going to help you.
No, it's not crash. It's like simple faults or bugs.
Well, having the module helps because it cuts down on the development cycle. Because then if you see a problem and you get to fix it, you don't have to recompile the kernel, restart the machine. You just recompile the module and reinstall the module. The machine is still up. It's a big improvement in development cycle.
Right, but if you have code that is crashing in the module, you mm-hmm. still have to reboot the machine.
No. You don't have to.
Potentially, you could corrupt the state of the kernel, right?
No,
not necessarily.
You have to remove the module and just insert the module again.
Depends on the crash.
Right.
But the very minimum that you get to avoid is recompiling the entire kernel. Even if you have to restart the machine, you don't have to recompile the kernel.
The whole thing cannot be moved to the module, right? There's some part of the code that...
No, there's some part of the code that is using some kernel functions like on the...
Your module can use kernel functions.
Yeah, but I have to export those functions to so that my modules can use them.
Oh, yeah. So I have to
add these export symbols everywhere in the kernel and then put out the module.
What is the part that cannot be moved to the module?
So you cannot use all the kernel functions from a module if they're explicitly not exported so that other modules can.
Right.
So now to export all the functions that I've been using from the kernel.
But there are functions that you modify too, right?
Yes. That's
new functions.
New functions. That can be used from a module easily. But the
functions
that
those can be implemented outside the kernel.
Yes.
Is what you mean.
Yes.
Right, because these are new functions. They don't modify existing functions.
But when I'm using something like VMA, add a new VMA, that's a kernel function already there. So I have to export this kernel VMA add VMA region to the, so that I can use it from my module. So there are a lot of functions that I've been using. We've been using from this.
Atha, you might want to check that. I'm just trying to think. There are some, you know, when you configure the kernel, sometimes you have kernel module support built in, sometimes you don't.
Yes.
And based on that, some symbols get exported, whereas some don't, right? Sometimes symbols get exported, sometimes they don't. So I'm guessing that you're turning on all the appropriate switches when you configure the kernel before you compile it. Right. So yeah.
For now, it's actually using the inside the kernel.
Right? I know, but I'm saying that when you configure the kernel, there are several things. For instance, there's kernel module support, there is experimental development support, and there are a few flags that you should be, you know, completely aware of. Because if you're developing a kernel module, some of these configuration options could really make things a lot easier for you. I don't know if you've looked into all the configuration.
I've used some a module file. There is a module file in the when you build a module, you can get the kernel modules, exported modules to a module symbols file.
Yeah.
So I've used this on my intern.
Okay.
So there's, I think I have to remember what I used there.
Okay.
To export the modules to the.
Yeah. Export the symbols.
Symbols. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I'm guessing that you'll figure it out. Just wanted to bring it up in case you weren't aware. Okay. So, what else? We'll meet again next week, and hopefully, it doesn't matter whether I'm doing the presentation tomorrow or not. I want you to just continue working on the slides and send those to me. Yeah?
Is the presentation tomorrow?
Yes. And I want both of you guys to be attending. It's at 1 o'clock, excuse me. You can make it tomorrow at 1. Okay, great. Yeah, I think it'll be a good experience because, you know, you'll see what I present and you'll see, you know, how we can make improvements to it. Because we'll have another one coming up in three months. And then we have to report every month as well. Right. Okay, good.
When are we getting the paper clip started?
We should get it started soon. Hopefully this week. I'm hoping that maybe this week we can do a brainstorming session for HotOS.
We also have the papers on the fast.
Yeah, but that's, you read it in your own time. We'll have one meeting to discuss all the papers. But we won't be discussing those papers every week.
The 30th, the deadline is
the end of the
29th.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll send out reminders. But what you want to do is I would recommend, if you haven't read the Timothy Roscoe guidelines for reviewing papers, I think they're very good. You should read them first if you've not read them before.
Roscoe.
Yeah. Yeah, so he works in Switzerland at a university called ETH. He's a really well-respected systems researcher. He publishes a lot in Neurosys and OSDI, SOSB.
I think we read a paper from the university.
The ETH? Binary,
the dynamic binary.
Okay, that's from ETH?
I think so.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's definitely from Zurich.
Okay. So, yeah, it's very likely that it's from ETH because there are two big universities there, ETH and EPFL. Both are very well respected. ETH is more systems, more respected for the systems work, and EPFL is more for database, other programming languages.